Thank you so much for inviting me to this evening. What I'm going to present is a rather impressionistic view or vision of Portugal, a country before I came to Canada 9 years ago in which I lived, a country in which I was a professor at the University of Coimbra and for on and off for 10 years. There are two passions in my life in terms of places, and one is Mexico and the other one is Portugal. Each one with a very different soul, if you will, and each one quite unique, I think, in world history. There's no relationship between what I'm speaking about necessarily and the slides I'm showing. they are kind of both impressionist. They're very impressionistic. Lisbon lies at the heart of Portugal and the Portuguese mystery. From there, the country's mythology and history began journeying across the globe and through the nomadic adventures of its sailors, its navigators, its traders and merchants and writers, the country's vision and solitary identity were forged. In literature, poetry, music, pictures and film, Portugal and Lisbon in particular has been conjured as a republic of fables, a nation nestled in legend, dreams, marvels, even miracles, where the fantastic has been made real. French writer Michel Dion describes it as one of Europe's lost paradises. The Phoenicians named Lisbon Ubis Ubo, Gentle Bay. The Romans, Alisipo, Good Water. And it has been the River Tagus and the sea, the changing light and the play of color on its surfaces, the reflections of the sky that seems to have defined its unique character and extraordinary attributes, which have been most remarked on by travelers, filmmakers, and writers since the 19th century. Along the Tagus, two ravens guided a boat containing the remains of St. Vincent, the city's first patron saint, in 1173. The same waterway evinced in Alan Turner's film, The White City, which is a very special film for me because when I saw that film, I think in the 1980s, the early 1980s, that's what led me. Within 2 days of seeing the film, I left London and went to Lisbon. Legend has it that Ulysses, the archetypal hero adventurer, founded Lisbon. And there, the sea nymph Calypso fell in love with him and enchanted him to stay and remain with her. After Jupiter ordered Calypso to free her unhappy lover, who yearned to return to Ithaca and his queen, she transformed herself into a serpent whose coils form the seven hills on which Lisbon is built. Perhaps such a story explains the exotic and strangely melancholic character that clings to Lisbon more than any other European capital. Texts recall the Roman legions who believed on entering Portugal they had found the Hesperidian gardens or the Elysian fields and the waters of the Leaf, the river of forgetfulness. Minho in the north of the country was called over and over again Arcadia. Jumping many millennia to 1886, Hans Christian Andersen visited and extolled the beauty of Lisbon. In the 20th century, the poet Roy Campbell described Lisbon as vast and floral, the eighth wonder of the world. Anne Bridge and Susan Lowndes in 1949 described Lisbon as the most beautiful of all cities, the color-washed houses attached like limpets to almost perpendicular cliffs. Ferdinand Pessoa, the great Portuguese poet, became the city's most eloquent exponent. Nothing nature or the country can give me compares with the jagged majesty of the tranquil, moonlit city as seen from the Graça or São Pedro de Alcantara. There are no flowers for me like the variegated colouring of Lisbon on a sunny day. And elsewhere, he notes, for the traveller who comes from the sea, Lisbon, even from afar, rises like a fair vision in a dream clear-cut against a bright blue sky, which the sun gladdens with its gold, and the domes, the monuments, the old castles jut up above the massive houses like far-off heralds of the delightful seat of this blessed region. José Saramago has described Lisbon as an illusion or a mirage, diffused through and fading and reappearing and fading again through storms of rainwater. And the Italian novelist and professor of Portuguese literature, Antonio Tabucci, in his novel Requiem, which was later made into a film, depicts Lisbon, the destination of his hero, as a dream where the living and the dead mingle on equal terms. The German writer Reinhold Schneider, writing in 1958, mentioned, "I love the apocalyptic nature atmosphere of European history. It is for this deep reason that I love Lisbon." Many of the writers, poets, filmmakers that created the mythology of Lisbon and Portugal were, of course, urbanites. They were people who lived in the cities. They built on 15th and 16th century chroniclers. Chroniclers like Fernão López de Castañeda, Damião Grois, or Luís Camarão, whose combined history, poetry, mingled allegory with fact. In the 19th century, writers like Camilo Castelo Branco, Essa de Quiroz, Almeida Garrett based short stories on country legends. And by the late 19th and 20th century, folklore was being actively collected and bound into encyclopedias by people like Alexandre Herculano, Teofilio Braga, Vasconcelos, and Coelho. The nation's early history was synthesized and made grand. But Portugal has a complex history. By 2016 BC, most of central and southern Portugal had been conquered by the Romans and gave rise to 400 years of prosperity before it in turn was conquered by the Germanic tribes in the 5th century. Then Muslim control, which by AD 711 had absorbed much of the peninsula in the kingdom of Al-Andalus. Reconquest began by Afonso Henriquez in 1139 and was completed by 1297, 200 years before Castile. At the completion of this great grand project, the Portuguese took to the sea. They did not look inland to Europe, but to the sea. In 1492, Bartolomeo Dias rounded the Cape of Good Hope and opened trade routes. Trading ports were established in Cochim in 1502, Ormuz 1507, Goa 1510, the Maldives 1510, Malacca 1511, Chahul 1516, Macau 1557. Florida was discovered in 1499, and Brazil the year after. Portuguese merchants and adventurers traveled as far as Sumatra, Java, Mindanao, Japan, Korea, China, and Tibet. They took overland routes into the interior of Mali, Benin, Congo, and Angola, and may have been the first Europeans to have visited Australia 250 years before Cook. Riches flowed into Portugal, ideas, fables, and fantasies, and also sciences. But the history of Portugal is also a history of disasters. Morocco in 1578, when 500 ships and 18,000 retainers led by the fated King Sebastian were defeated and killed along with most of the Portuguese nobility, passing the line of descent to Castile. And this began the 60-year union of Castile and Portugal. In 1627, 40,000 Christian converts were expelled or killed from Japan. And in 1755, the earthquake and tsunami, which hit on the 1st of November, All Souls Day, an earthquake that was felt throughout southern Europe, destroyed nearly half the city, destroyed 32 palaces, and killed over 40,000 people. Kant wrote three pamphlets which mentioned the earthquake. Voltaire wrote about the earthquake in Candide as a malice, as a evidence of a malice sent by God. And Rousseau used it to argue against the growth of cities. Religion too has been folded in on itself, and Christianity, at least until the 1960s, carried vestiges of Roman and Ibero-Celtic beliefs. Between the 4th and the 6th century, the schism in the church was very, very strongly felt, particularly in Portugal and Spain. Priscillianism and Orthodox Christianity, Egyptian in origin, which espoused the existence of two kingdoms, a kingdom of light and a kingdom of darkness. Human souls were intended to do battle to vanquish the darkness, but as they fell in battle, they were vanquished to the earth and imprisoned in physical bodily forms. Severed from God, humanity was constituted by light and dark. Priscillianism, in order to survive in any form whatsoever, adopted itself after the 6th century within a kind of an orthodox Christian framework. But Roman patron deities became transformed into Christian martyrs and Christian saints. The day honoring Saint Martin and Saint Vincent in Portugal is the same day that was reserved in Roman times to Bacchus. Saint George, according to some writers, is a transformation of Jupiter. And the Virgin Mary has been suggested as their origins in various Ibero-Celtic cults around mother goddesses. The hagiography of saints and saint days in Portugal lends a kind of a mythical irreality to the everyday. You have to go into any Catholic bookstore to find lists of saints and their specific duties and responsibilities. Saint Daphne shares her duty as patron of the family and harmony with responsibility for insanity, nerves, and runaways. Saint Anthony, patron of the poor, also cares for amputees, grave diggers, and can help you find lost articles. And Saint Kieteria is the patroness of mad dogs. Many had their own cults. Many once had pilgrimages and sacred sites, often associated with Roman or Celtic sites associated with the pilgrimage center and the church. But there is still a matter-of-fact attitude to religion. One anthropologist writing in the 1980s noted an agricultural labor saying to him, "We don't know if God exists, but we cannot deny this saint, Nossa Senhora de Aires. She has worked many miracles." The ebbs and eddies of history have piled up history. It's a Baroque country, rather like kind of Mexico, and which is being shown the exhibition on The Marvelous Real, which is being shown at the Museum of Anthropology at present, which also looks at Mexico as another Baroque country with a Baroque sensibility that you can find in its heart. History is cyclical. It oscillates between European and foreign alignments. At sometimes, Portugal looks into itself and into Europe, and at other times it looks at the rest of the world. Da Costa wrote, "We are a people from the shores, from the banks of mystery, with an everlasting inborn fascination for the ocean that has impregnated our ways of thinking, of being, of imagining, of creating, and of suffering." Camões in Os Lusíadas structures this great epic of Portuguese discovery around Homer's Odyssey, where Vasco da Gama takes the role of Ulysses, the founder, the mythical founder of Lisbon itself. Da Gama battles with the aid of Jupiter and Venus, Bacchus, the ruler of India, who feared losing his kingdom. But seafaring heralds, departure, the leaving of the land, home and loved ones, creates also a nostalgia, a melancholy mixed with fear of the ocean void. 16th century writers like João Ruiz de Castelbranco have preserved verses such as this: parting in sadness, my eyes that yearn for you, my beloved, are the mirrors of sorrow unparalleled. Belém, where the sailors and the ships departed from, has been called by Guerra the beach of tears. And da Costa asks the question, will they return or not return? We are born of an anguish the size of centuries. Ferdinand Pessoa himself talks of the sea. O salty sea, so much of whose salt is Portugal's tears. And da Costa declares, we are a people from the shadows and not from the radiant light. We are more akin to the moon and the ocean than to the sun and the solid earth. In Mensahim, in Message, Pessoa laments, for we, the Portuguese, fathers of oceans, can only want and win one thing, the entire sea, or mere scattered foam, everything or it's nothing. Was the weight of victory and defeat, of adventure and solitude worth it? Again, Pessoa replies, everything is worth doing if the soul of the doer isn't small. And in his poem, Sebastian, on the defeated king who lay dead on the battlefields of Morocco, he challenges, let other Tez take up my madness and all that went with it. Without madness, what is humanity but a healthy beast, postponed corpse that breeds? Pessoa, going back to the beginning of this talk in a poem called Ulysses, has the following to say. Myth is the nothing that is everything. The very sun that breaks through the skies is a bright and wordless myth. God's dead body, naked and alive. This hero cast anchor here because he never was, slowly came to exist without ever being he suffused us. Having never come here, he came to be our founder. Thus the legend, little by little, seeps into reality, spreading and enriching it. Life down below, half of nothing, perishes. With such disquietudes, heroism in victory and in defeat, with such baroque foldings of myth and history, in a place between heaven and hell, as in a dream, splashed in love and longing, Fado took wings. Thank you.
Thank you again so much for coming, and I really hope that you enjoy the concert tonight, and another warm applause for Dr. Shelton. Thanks so much.